Welcome to The Vampire Squid, a podcast about increasing transparency and education in finance. This is your host, Alan Lee, and welcome to episode 50 of The Vampire Squid. I can't believe that it's already episode 50, and we're almost reaching our one-year mark of when I first started this last July. But I'm really excited and proud that we are here and where we are today. I will definitely continue to do my best to stay true to my goal of increasing transparency and education in finance. So today's episode is the second part with Anthony Zhang, who was a Teal Fellow and founded Onboard Now, which was later sold to Joyrun. And in today's episode, we cover things like Anthony's advice to entrepreneurs that don't necessarily have that idea or that passion, that they know this is what they want to do for the rest of their life, or this is the idea that's going to be it. Because I feel like there's a lot of people that want to do entrepreneurship, but don't necessarily have that one certain idea that they're passionate about. You know, we also talk about things like Anthony's advice to people that didn't get a job promotion or didn't get that grade that you wanted when it feels like the end of the world. Anthony obviously has a much wider perspective and a deep experience in overcoming tragedies. So it's really great to hear his perspective on some of these questions. And as always, if you have any questions or comments or suggestions, please feel free to email me at Alan, A-L-A-N, at thevampiresquid.com. And you can always check out my Facebook page, facebook.com/thevampiresquid, for live updates. So without further ado, here you go. Mm-hmm. And when did you start thinking about entrepreneurship again and your startup? When did those thoughts come back?
Unfortunately, it came back pretty abruptly when my co-founders pretty much called me up one day. They're like, "Hey, Anthony, I know this is really bad timing with your recovery, but we have given it all over the past 6 months. We think that we should shut it down because we don't have anything left in the tank." So at that point, I was immediately jolted into kind of a fight or flight mode where I knew that if I didn't do anything, the company that has pretty much defined my career would go out of business.
So this was in, you said, about 4 or 5 months after or 6 months after as coinciding with your recovery, or when did this conversation happen?
Yeah, this happened pretty much right in middle of September. So right when I was leaving the rehab center and moving into an apartment nearby to continue outpatient therapies.
Got it. So that's when you had to, you know, start thinking about the startup again, you know, how to basically save your company. And obviously that's another stressful situation to go through as well. And, you know, now that you've ultimately sold your company, and had a successful exit, you know, that's quite an accomplishment. But tell us a little bit more about what were your thoughts and what were your decisions during that time when your team was, you know, wanting to quit, but you obviously wanted to do something a little bit more.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the first thing I did was just kind of think to myself and talk to my advisors. And before doing that, I was just thinking to myself, like, do I have it in me to make a push for this? You know, being able to successfully prepare yourself for an acquisition, let alone have the right conversations, is going to take a lot of. At that point in my life, was I ready to put that as a big focus where, you know, I was still trying to put my life back together? And I just realized I could not let this thing die without giving it my best efforts. That was just kind of something in me that I knew I couldn't let go, and I knew I would regret for the rest of my life if I didn't give it a shot. So I called up every single employee in our company in the hospital, and I was like, "Hey, this is what's happening. Probably going to shut down, but I want to try to get this acquired, but I can't do it myself. You know, I can't handle the day-to-days because I'm in 5 to 6 hours of therapy every day. But I can handle the overall strategy. I can help you guys have the motivation and lead and have these conversations with potential companies to get us to an acquisition. Are you guys in or are you guys out?" So, you know, really, really thankfully, every single other person in the company was very motivated to stay on. And they were the ones who came up with the ideas to kind of help drive our growth, help us get to a place where we were in an attractive acquisition target. And, you know, I was able to reach out through, you know, some previous connections and just through conversations to get to a place where we had two meaningful offers at the end of the year and decided to go with the one that we felt best about.
Got it. So it took you about, you know, a few months to get those offers and then ultimately, you know, close and sell your startup. And that's pretty quick too. So your team must have been working quite hard, and you yourself obviously as well, you know, to reach out. Did you guys, use any banks to help you reach out to the different, you know, companies to get these offers, or how did you navigate that process?
We were really thankful with our advisors and our investors. You know, they previously either as an operator had gone through an acquisition or, you know, had seen it many, many times with their portfolio companies. So, they said the best way was just to contact the CEO directly, especially, you know, with the companies that we were looking at also being startups, just a little bit later stage. I pretty much just reached out on LinkedIn to a couple of founders that I knew, got some intros to another few founders, and, you know, we're able to just be pretty honest.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you guys ultimately got acquired by Joyrun. Is the strategy of Joyrun very different from that of Envoy Now, or are there any particular differences that you would note?
I'd say what really got me and my team and the investors excited about Joyrun was they took our almost biggest selling point, which is the density of college campuses and getting friends ordered together, with that being kind of the most optimal efficiency on the supply end. They kind of made that their whole platform. So if you scroll on through Joyrun, you'll see that it's pretty much like a social feed. It's not really like what other food delivery apps look like. And you'll see, it'll say, Anthony is going to Starbucks. And you'll see underneath there, you know, three bubbles of other potential customers. Like, we want in. I think that behavior is really strong because, you know, we all go through the problem of, you know, being hungry and be like, okay, what's for dinner? What should we order this time? And when you see a notification on your app being, hey, your friend is grabbing Chipotle, your friend is grabbing, Mexican food, do you want in? It's a very strong call to action and, you know, really helps A, like, maximize the earnings for the runners on the community platform, and B, also almost takes away completely the logistical burden of an on-demand company, because it's not really on-demand anymore. It's almost like just posting runs on a bulletin board, or same behavior of you going out to pick up food and just asking your closest friends.
Interesting. Talk a little bit about, you know, being an entrepreneur, being the CEO of a company, and then being acquired and not being the CEO of the company. How do you describe that experience, or are there any difficulties transitioning into becoming an employee again, or is there, you know, sort of this burning desire to keep on wanting to be an entrepreneur and to start something else later? What are your thoughts there?
I would be lying if I said that going from founder to employee was an easy process. You know, thankfully I was able to really see eye to eye with the CEO and have a lot of input in terms of driving the growth, the products of Joyrun, but you know, it's always a different situation because you come from one company culture where me as a CEO have 100% reign in what happens and, you know, how people interact with each other and have to adapt to, you know, first of all, a whole different group of people who have had different experiences leading up to that. You're just kind of, you know, spliced in there. And second of all, it is a much larger company, so things need to run differently in order to be efficient. It's definitely a great learning process in kind of being with a large company, being, you know, able to interact with much more experienced entrepreneurs, and also kind of grow this a little on the go.
I'm curious to what your thoughts are on starting a successful startup. And I know that, you know, there's people that say, you know, company culture is the most important, and others like the idea is the most important. People talk about grit being the most important. What is, in your view, you know, some of the most important things to be successful in starting a company?
I'd probably say grit, and just like knowing when you're wrong, because, you know, as you said, there were so many food delivery apps, right? And so many college food delivery apps. Every single campus that we went on to, you know, there were already a couple existing ones or ones that had previously gone out of business. And the difference between them and us wasn't necessarily business model, or it wasn't necessarily better marketing. It was just that we knew how to persevere and also take the challenges that we had and adapt. So I think that applies to almost any market where there are a lot of competitors, because a lot of times it's about being the last, you know, the last survivor.
And what do you mean by knowing when you're wrong? Do you have a specific example of that?
I feel like there's just so many mistakes that we make every day in the business. But say this, for example, like we have a playbook to launch every single market, and say something that has worked well at our first 10 campuses, you know, we're pushing it at our 11th campus and we were not getting the results. We were putting in the time, doing things exactly the same way. And we had two options: A, to just abandon the market; B, to adapt. Kind of the average income. There's so many different factors that we didn't look at while applying this kind of copy-paste playbook. And that's why, for us, a big part of our playbook was to adapt to each market and really, really listen to what the customers on the ground and the delivery people and the restaurant owners on the ground were saying.
Gotcha. And I remember reading in the article that, you know, you had sort of a list of ideas that you could potentially pursue in the future. Would you mind sharing any of those ideas or talk a little bit about, you know, what you have in plan for the future?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just being someone who started a company so early in his life, like, I think that this is something that I want to keep on doing, you know, whether it is start a new company. I definitely know that's going to happen later on in my life. And I think right now, you know, having gone through this traumatic accident and, you know, being very, very well acquainted with the medical and healthcare world, more so than a typical 22-year-old is, I see a ton of inefficiencies in the healthcare and medical industry. Whether it be billing or like caregiving or, how records are processed or even payments. There's a lot of things that I am thinking about improving and, just need to kind of stew it over a little bit and see when the right time to pursue this opportunity would be.
So no plans on being an investment banker anytime soon?
I do love the finance world. That's something that I still do have an interest in and do keep up with every day. But I think right now, like being at a startup and working on something and building it and having just kind of more control over my destiny, that's what makes me happy.
I'm curious, you know, since you've, you know, been through a traumatic accident and you know, founded a company and sold a company, these are all, you know, very extreme situations. What do you have any advice for people that face normal day setbacks in life? You know, say, you know, a person doesn't get a promotion that they wanted, or they don't get the grade that they wanted, or they don't, receive a raise that they were expecting. And it may seem like the end of the world to that specific person. What advice do you have for those people, given the experiences that you've had and you've overcome?
Yeah, I would say to find another angle to tackle that, because I can just remember, even in college, like, if I wasn't happy with the grade, I would talk to the professor, see what I can do to change that, whether it be redoing the project or doing extra credit or just kind of, you know, bringing in a guest speaker, for example, that I had just contacted on my own and thought would be a great fit for a business class that I was taking. So I feel like with things that get you down, whether it be, you know, for example, like a restaurant rejecting to work with us, things can always be turned around if you look at it from a different perspective. And I would say to not take that initial rejection or disappointment as a concrete answer if you're not satisfied with it.
Interesting. So is that sort of like a tenacity and trying to approach the problem with solutions from different angles that aren't, you know, traditionally how you would solve it? Is that what you mean?
I would say so. Cause I mean, a lot of times, like, you know, it's just that extra ounce of effort that really makes a difference, you know, the tipping point, per se. And, people do appreciate when you put in extra effort. They notice it, and it goes a long way to show what your character is like as well.
And just also in terms of people that are interested in entrepreneurship and do want to start a company one day down the line, but don't necessarily have that idea in place that they're very passionate about. How do you advise those students or those people to, you know, ultimately find their passion or their idea? You know, how do they get that idea to ultimately pursue as an entrepreneurship, you know, angle or a company down the line?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question. I feel like a lot of people will find it with different inspirations, but I'd say for me, you know, I started Envoy Now just as something fun for my friends. You know, it wasn't, I love food just as much as the next guy, but it wasn't my true passion. But I'd say as I developed it and, encountered challenges and went through the growing process and all the pains to go with it, I became more passionate about it. So I'd say if you have something that you think might work, try it out. Definitely don't give up on what your main day job is right now. But when you find that you're spending more time or thinking more about your side project than your day job, maybe that's, you know, make that decision to go full in.
Got it. And I think that makes sense. Because I think with a lot of people, a lot of ideas start out as something that is on the side, or it's a side project, or it's something they do recreationally, but then, you know, it can turn out to be something a lot bigger. And, you know, as you find success, you find more passion as well. So I think that's sound advice. So I know we're running a little bit short on time and you have to run, and I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but, you know, so my listener base is majority millennial, or, you know, first couple jobs out of college. And given your experiences, is there maybe a piece of advice that you'd want to leave my listeners with, or a story you'd like to share, or anything before we close off?
I would say, especially if you're young, you know, you don't have the most experience, you know, when you're in a room with someone, I would definitely just be confident, because in every single negotiation that I was with, whether it be fundraising, whether it be hiring someone much, much older and more experienced than me, or, you know, negotiating with a sales contract, I was always on the end of being the student, the person without a college degree, the person who had not gone through this before. But if I let that get the best of me, I definitely would not have gotten to where I am today. So I would say be confident and be happy. And, if any of the listeners have any specific questions for me, I'm pretty available on Twitter at AnthonyJZ17. I'm happy to answer any questions on there.
Great. And I'll definitely post that link into my show notes so my listeners can contact you. But Anthony, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast. I had a really good time chatting with you.
Absolutely, Alan. Had a great time as well. Thanks.